This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. And coming up on Africa News Tonight, Liberians wait for the results of Tuesday's election, and Britain's King and Queen will make a four-day state visit to Kenya. We'll have these and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Israel and Hamas continue to bombard each other's territory as fighting continues in the conflict that began Saturday when Hamas forces attacked Israel. We have journalist Linda Grandstein on the line with us from Jerusalem. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you very much.
So Israel Defense Forces are saying they have hit hundreds of targets in Gaza, including banks and places Israel thinks were used by Hamas. Talk to us a little about that.
Sure. I mean, Israel has said that it has decided that it is in an all-out war with Hamas, with the military infrastructure. And what they say is that the military infrastructure in Gaza, which is a very densely populated area, the Hamas infrastructure is hidden in schools and mosques and in regular apartment buildings, and that they are determined to root that out. And what it means is that more than 1,000 Palestinians have been killed, including hundreds of innocent civilians. The Israeli airstrikes show no sign of stopping. At the same time today, we had some incursions a couple of hours ago from Lebanon, and there's concern in Israel that it could lead to a two-front conflict. In other words, that Israel will continue to fight Hamas in Gaza and will have to face Hezbollah, which is an Iranian-backed militia in South Lebanon.
With this heavy bombardment from the air, land, and sea continuing, more than, according to reports, more than 260,000 people have fled their homes in the Gaza Strip. So, Linda, where are they going? I understand the U.S. was discussing with Israel and Egypt the idea of a safe passage for Gaza civilians.
Yes. I mean, you know, Gaza is one of the most densely populated places in the world. It's also one of the poorest places. Gaza has a population of about 2.3 million, and more than a million of those, in other words, almost half the population, relies on food aid from the United Nations. So Israel, obviously, is in a state of war with Hamas, but Israel is encouraging Egypt to welcome these civilian refugees. I actually have a friend in Gaza, and she fled her home because she was afraid that her building would be bombed by Israel, and she's taking shelter in a UN school. But, you know, she would be very happy to be able to be evacuated to Egypt. So, yes, there is discussion on that issue of a safe passage for civilians.
And Pope Francis has called for the release of all hostages held by Hamas. And there are Americans there, Americans being held there. Expect the number is supposed to get bigger. 14.
Well, there are between 100 and 150 hostages held in total. Mm-hmm. Many of them were at this big music festival with 5,000 young Israelis. I actually know one of the young men who was there. He's just turned 23. His parents are friends of mine, and he came to Israel with his family from California when he was 7 years old and then grew up in Israel. And apparently he was wounded in the Hamas assault, his parents say. His arm, the second lower part of his arm, was blown off. He used his own shirt to make a tourniquet. He and a friend apparently, when Hamas gunmen threw grenades at them, they kind of caught the grenades and threw them back. And he is believed to be held captive in Gaza. I don't know if they know whether or not he's alive. Of the hostages, it's not clear who's alive and who's not. Hamas has threatened to start executing the hostages if Israel continues its air bombardment of Gaza.
And there are different nationalities as far as hostages are concerned. Not only Americans, but for instance, the Thailand government just received reports that its people, its nationals, had been taken hostage in the ongoing violence in Gaza.
Well, you know, there are tens of thousands of Thai workers in Israel. They work mostly in agriculture, and there was a lot of agriculture on in the communities along the Israel-Gaza border. So there were tens of thousands of Thai workers, and apparently a couple of dozen of the hostages are Thai workers. They're Americans, they're Germans, French. And in addition to not yesterday, I think yesterday. Sorry, everything kind of, you know, blends together. But yesterday, the Israeli the troops found 30 people, about half of them were Israelis and half of them were Thai workers who had been hiding since Saturday. And they were saved and are still alive. So, you know, yes, this is a conflict that has involved not only Israelis, but a lot of international citizens as well.
And Linda, update us on the death toll. There is reports that the death toll in Israel rose by 200 to, I think, 1,200.
Yes,
from both
sides. The death toll right now is 1,200. And again, that happened after at this music festival that I mentioned where this young man, Hirsch, that I spoke about, Hirsch Goldberg Poland, was kidnapped. They found 260 bodies. There were about 5,000 young Israelis. And I just have to say, you know, I have children that age, and I keep thinking about these young people who just went to have a good time at a music festival and found themselves involved in this horror.
And you are in Jerusalem. And lastly, what is the mood now? What are people actually talking about, thinking, really?
So I think the mood is getting angry and sad. First of all, the mood is very sad. And it seems like it's constantly, you know, people who had somebody missing, and then, you know, as anyone who had somebody missing was asked to bring DNA, you know, their hairbrush or their toothbrush to a central point. A lot of the bodies have apparently been burned beyond recognition. The scenes, there were several communities on the south that there were real massacres where you have hundreds of bodies, and I don't even want to describe it. But so the process of identifying the dead has taken longer than it usually does. So the mood is incredibly sad. There's funeral after funeral. According to Jewish law, the bodies have to be buried as soon as possible. They don't wait. It's a question of hours. So from the time that they're actually identified, there's a funeral. So it's just very sad and also very angry. People are very angry at Hamas.
Yes, so sad. And there seems to be no end in sight. Linda Grantstein on the line from Jerusalem. Thank you for your input again.
Thank you.
Some experts on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict argue that ultimately the problem is that after violent escalations ease, there is no movement forward to find a permanent peace, such as the so-called two-state solution, creating separate nations for Israelis and Palestinians. Khalil Jashan, executive director of the Arab Center in Washington, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi about the problem.
My impression is somewhat mixed to this question. On the one hand, you're right in raising in your question the idea that we have seen wars before, we've seen this film before, we've seen the violence, and then people are so quick to, once the guns become silent, are so quick to forget and move their own way and not do anything to deal with the underlying issues and try to solve the problem and avoid future confrontation. That's one reaction. The other reaction is I'm also reminded as a student of history that in the past, particularly the United States, never really advanced a peace process except after a bloody war or violent event in the region. If you look back at 67, if you look back at 82, if you look back at 92, 93, all these American proposals going back, you know, from the Reagan administration to the current administration, they are never ready to pay the price and propose some ideas for peace, except when there is violence and when they reach the point of let's rescue Israel in spite of itself. So it might happen this time, particularly if there is an escalation. And I'm not sure if there will be, but I would say that the U.S. will be more concerned and might propose some ideas to move forward if the Northern Front is activated, if there is a clash, especially that requires more U.S. involvement. If the Fifth Fleet that's poised to help Israel is dragged into this conflict, especially involving beyond Hamas, other Palestinians, other countries in the region, Lebanon, Hezbollah, if it becomes more serious, the U.S. would feel compelled to intervene.
Did Hamas miscalculate the consequences of the surprising attack on Israel?
Hamas was probably, as most people will tell you, particularly those who are familiar with intelligence matters, the fact that they have managed to plan a campaign of this sort, an operation of this sort, so sophisticated, so multifaceted, so quick in achieving results, so quick in surprising Israeli defenses while acknowledging that Israel is the strongest military superpower in the region and with the highest security arrangements anywhere. And to be able to surprise the Israelis with their operation and extend it for several days now, that is surprising, particularly to those who are, as I said, experts on intelligence matters. And I'm not. I'm a political analyst. But even from a political analysis perspective, it was definitely a surprising and paradigm-changing event. I think when we teach the Middle East, particularly the Arab-Israeli conflict in the future, we used to say and divide that history from 48 to today into five or six phases, beginning with the Nakba, beginning with the refugee problem, beginning with the 67 war and so on. Now we have to add a new phase. I think 2023 changed the paradigm. And so in that sense, it's been a larger than life event. In terms of results, I'm not sure. I think if, as I understand it, Hamas had indeed political objectives for this madness, and they probably wanted to pursue a role for themselves and for the Palestinians, and wanted to send a message that the new Middle East that's being created anew, as announced at the UN General Assembly in recent months, and that the Palestinians need to have a role and need to have a veto, unlike what the Israelis said they were willing to do, a presence, but not necessarily a vote for the Palestinians. What Hamas is saying, you can't create that new map of the Middle East without Palestine in it. Whether that's achievable or not, only history will determine.
That was Khalil Jashan, Executive Director of the Arab Center in Washington, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. The International Monetary Fund says Africa's economic growth will shrink for a second year in a row in 2023 before rebounding in 2024. The IMF's World Economic Outlook report says growth in the region is expected to fall to 3.3% this year from 4% last year before bouncing back to 4% in 2024. It gives several factors for the decline, including Russia's invasion of Ukraine and complications from COVID-19, which sent food, fuel, and fertilizer prices soaring last year. Reuters News says weakening currencies, higher debt services, and restricted access to capital markets added to debt pressures. However, improved growth is expected in a few countries this year. Kenya's growth will accelerate by 5% this year, up from 4.8% in 2022, despite budget cuts and soaring debt costs. Tanzania and Senegal are also set to see higher growth this year. Annual inflation across the region, which has seen violent protests against the cost of living in countries including Ghana and Kenya, is expected to be 16.2% at the end of this year. Liberians voted yesterday in high-stakes presidential and parliamentary elections. Incumbent President George Weah, a decorated former football star, is seeking a second six-year term in a contentious rematch with former Vice President Joseph Boakai of the main opposition Unity Party. For the latest on the day after the election, I talked with our reporter in Monrovia, Denise Nimpson.
Today, Liberians gathered in their mass to go and vote. The turnout was huge, and some of those I spoke with also said they went there around
3 a.m., 5 a.m. in the morning, people were actually spirited, were in their high mood to go out and vote.
Denise, around 2.4 million Liberians, mostly young people, are registered to vote in the election, and probably they were the ones on the line. And analysts say this is a two-horse race between Weah and Boakai. Where is this thing leaning to?
Following yesterday's process, after the ballot were cast and the voting process ended by 6 p.m., although it extended because at some area they started late, so they went beyond the 6 p.m. So as late as 10, 12 midnight, they were counting ongoing and results were coming up to 4 a.m. and even 6 and 7 a.m. today results were coming. So indeed, it is a two-horse race.
Have both made any statements or they're just waiting for the results?
There have not been statements from the both parties, the both standard bearer of the CDC and the United Party. They have been waiting for what has been happening since yesterday has been supporters of both parties coming up with their own numbers, projecting that, yes, they have some level of win in some of the counties, because Liberia has 16 counties, so they were projecting. But all the parties, they have what they call their war room. So they take their numbers from there and project that and say we are winning. So both sides are claiming win, but the National Elections Commission will be the final decision maker in terms of pronouncing who win the election.
So when do you think we will know the results? How many days does it take?
As per the Constitution, it is within 15 days that the election results should be announced, within 15 days. They will have to wait because of the country and some challenges in getting across the country with the bar road network and all of that. And in Liberia currently, it is rainy season. And even yesterday, after the voting, they said they had challenge in getting to some part of, for that reason, today they are, yes, voting ongoing in some part of Sino County, because according to NEC, they were unable to reach there with the materials in time.
That was Denise Nimpson, our reporter in Monrovia. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The International Day of the Girl Child focuses on the treatment of girls because in many places, society gives more privileges to boys. In most parts of Nigeria, the girl child is considered subordinate to boys. Our reporter in Abuja takes a look at some challenges facing girls in Nigeria.
Girls have always faced discrimination in every facet of life in Nigeria, as they do in many countries around the world. Many families generally believe girls are best suited to be homekeepers. In a bid to address the situation, the United Nations set aside October 11 as International Day of the Girl Child to promote human rights for girls and highlight gender inequalities. Halima Balogun, a student from Kwara State, shares her experience in school, where a male was preferred over her in a school contest.
I wanted to contest for the position of director of social for my department, mass communication. And then the people in charge of the whole election scene, they're like, this should go to a boy instead, and then a female can come up and be the assistant. And then I'm like, why? Why can't I be the director? Why can't I contest? They're like, if I should contest with him, I'll have a slimmer chance of winning the position, because most people want the director to be headed by a male figure.
Balogu says she would like to see a change in gender roles in Nigeria and the general thinking that men should enjoy a higher status than women.
So I feel like it should be mixed, it should be balanced. Females are left to the kitchen, females know how to cook, while the male barely know how to cook. They can hardly even boil water, they don't even know how to turn gas.
According to UNICEF, girls between 5 and 14 years old spend 40% more time, or 160 million more hours a day, on unpaid household chores, including collecting water and firewood, compared with boys. Teenager Abdul Latif Rahmat from Bida in Niger State is not happy with the situation.
My parents think that they can't wash plates, cook, because their boy is meant for a lady to do that. Sometimes I might be sick. They'll be expecting me to be doing it even if I'm sick.
In some Nigerian homes, the views of women are not regarded when decisions are made, even in matters that concern them. Rahmat says she hopes society will abolish certain privileges given to boys to enable girls to enjoy equal rights without any cultural bias or hindrance. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
The Rwandan government is trying to silence critics and dissidents living overseas through extrajudicial killings, kidnappings and intimidation, according to a report from Human Rights Watch. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
A Human Rights Watch report says the government of Rwandan President Paul Kagame is using violence and fear to silence critics at home and around the world. Yasmin Ahmed is from Human Rights Watch.
It is a relentless attack on individuals using a multiplicity of tools and tactics to try and keep people silent.
President Kagame is credited with helping to unify Rwanda after the 1994 genocide. Noel Zihabamwe was a young boy at the time and witnessed family and friends murdered. 10 years later, he fled the country after refusing to join Kagame's ruling party, the Rwandan Patriotic Front. He was interviewed by Human Rights Watch.
I know many people have refused to become members and they end up either being jailed or disappearing. So that's how I left Rwanda.
After he left, Zihabamwe says his two brothers and his nephew were arrested in Rwanda.
They tortured them. So they were with my brother's son, first son, who was 19. There's many thousands of people being disappeared. And they're still missing as we speak today.
Human Rights Watch has documented 5 cases of killings and several kidnappings and physical assaults of Rwandans living elsewhere in Africa. Again, Yasmin Ahmed.
But we also see it in Europe, where we've seen that there have been threat to life warnings against individuals in the United Kingdom. We've seen individuals who've also had their family members targeted. We've had individuals who've been subject to the misuse of international law enforcement mechanisms.
Rwanda is seen as a key partner by many Western nations. President Kagame has overseen one of the fastest growing African economies. Kagame's government is also accused of supporting an ongoing insurgency by rebel groups in neighbouring Democratic Republic of Congo, which it denies. Again, Yasmin Ahmed.
Because of the failure of governments for their own interests standing up to Rwanda, we've seen Rwanda's extensive abuses now being carried out globally.
The Rwandan government said the Human Rights Watch report presents a distorted picture that only exists in their imagination. The government added it had made transformational progress in advancing the rights, well-being and dignity of Rwandans over the past 29 years. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.